My name is Martin Viecha, VP of Investor Relations, and I'm joined today by Elon Musk, Zachary Kirkhorn, and a number of other executives. Our Q4 results were announced at about 3 p.m. Central Time in the update deck we published at the same link as this webcast. During this call, we will discuss our business outlook and make forward-looking statements. These comments are based on our predictions and expectations as of today. Actual events or results could differ materially due to a number of risks and uncertainties, including those mentioned in our most recent filings with the SEC. During the question and answer portion of today's call, please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. Please use the raise hand button to join the question queue. But before we jump into Q&A, Elon has some opening remarks. Elon?
Thank you, Martin. So, 2022 recap. It was a fantastic year for Tesla. It was our best year ever on every level. The team did an amazing job. It's an honor, of course, to work with such an incredibly talented group of people. So in 2022, we delivered over 1.3 million cars and achieved a 17% operating margin, the highest among any volume car maker, I think maybe among any car maker. While doing so, we generated $12.5 billion in net income and $7.5 billion in free cash flow. Importantly, the Tesla team achieved these records despite the fact that 2022 was an incredibly challenging year due to forced shutdowns, very high interest rates, and many delivery challenges. So it's worth noting that, you know, all these records were in the face of massive difficulties. A credit to the team for achieving that. The most common question we've been getting from investors is about demand. I want to put that concern to rest. Thus far in January, we've seen the strongest orders year to date than ever in our history. We currently are seeing orders at almost twice the rate of production. So I mean that's hard to say whether that will continue at twice the rate of production, but the orders are high. And we've actually raised the Model Y price a little bit in response to that. So we think demand will be good despite probably a contraction in the automotive market as a whole. Basically, price really matters. I think there's just a vast number of people that want to buy a Tesla car, but can't afford it. And so these price changes really make a difference for the average consumer. It's sometimes, for people who are well, have a lot of money, they sort of forget about how important affordability is. And it's always been our goal at Tesla to make cars that are affordable to as many people as possible. So I'm glad that we're able to do so. So I think it's a good thing, all things considered. We're also making very good progress on cost control, we're seeing the costs of production in Berlin and Austin drop commensurate with the growth in production, as you'd expect. With respect to Autopilot, as of now, we deployed full self-driving beta on four city streets to roughly 400,000 customers in North America. This is a huge milestone for autonomy, as FSD beta is the only way any consumer can actually test the latest AI-powered autonomy. And we're currently at about 100 million miles of FSD outside of highways. And our published data shows that improvement in safety statistics is very clear. We would not have released the FSD beta if the safety statistics were not excellent. regarding batteries, production rate of 4680 cells reached 1,000 cars a week at the end of last year. And we're increasing capacity for 4680 cells by another 100 gigawatt hours, as announced at Giga Nevada yesterday. Our long-term goal is to get to well in excess of 1,000 gigawatt hours of cells produced internally and continue to use other cell providers. So to be clear, we will continue to use other cell providers, just that the demand for lithium-ion batteries is quasi-infinite and will be for quite some time. So we feel we can scale a lot faster using both suppliers and internally produced cells. and we've got an amazing plan for making the 4680 cell low cost and high energy density. So energy storage also saw record growth, and that is continuing to accelerate. It's always worth remembering that the three pillars of a sustainable energy future are obviously electric vehicles, solar and wind, and then the third key item is stationary storage to store the energy from solar and wind, because obviously the sun doesn't shine all the time and the wind doesn't blow all the time. So if you have those three things, you can convert all of Earth to a fully sustainable situation, many times over, actually. So I would like to just, make it clear that there is a path to a fully sustainable future for humanity, and our goal at Tesla is to accelerate progress on that path as much as humanly possible. So, we were obviously ramping up Megapack production, we expect it to grow at a rate quite a bit faster than our vehicle output. So, in conclusion, we are taking a view that we want to keep making and selling as many cars as we can. We believe we can keep pushing for strong volume growth while retaining the industry's best operating margins. As we mentioned many times before, we want to be the best manufacturer. But really, manufacturing technology will be our most important long-term strength. So, and we'll talk more about our upcoming plans at the March 1st Investor Day. And lastly, I want to once again thank all of our employees for delivering another record-breaking year. Congratulations, guys.
Thanks, Elon. And I think Zach has some opening remarks as well.
Yeah, thanks, Martin. So as Elon mentioned, 2022 was a terrific year for Tesla. I also want to congratulate the Tesla team and also say a thank you to our suppliers for your support during quite a volatile year. On a full year basis, revenue increased over 50%, operating income doubled, free cash flows increased over 50%, and our margins remained industry leading. Additionally, we continue to make progress on overhead efficiencies as non-GAAP OPEX as a percentage of revenue improved further. For Q4 specifically, sequential and annual margin was impacted by ASP reductions as we were managing through COVID impacts in China, uncertainty around the consumer tax credit in the U.S., and a rising interest rate environment. Note that in 2022, rising interest rates alone had effectively increased the price of our cars in the U.S. by nearly 10%. Additionally, COGS per unit has increased on a year-over-year basis, driven primarily by three factors. First is raw materials and inflation led by lithium prices and discussed at length in previous calls. Second, we are working through the early ramp of inefficiencies of our Austin and Berlin and in-house cell production factories. Third, our vehicle mix over the last year has moved more heavily towards Model Y, which carries a slight cost premium to Model 3. Partially offsetting these impacts, we've continued to execute on Tesla controllable cost reductions in line with the progress we've made in prior years. These improvements include our continued work to gradually move towards a regionally balanced build of vehicles. The energy business had its strongest year yet across all metrics, led by steady improvement in both retail and commercial storage. While much work remains to grow this business and improve cost, we believe we are on a good trajectory. As we look towards 2023, we're moving forward aggressively, leveraging our strength and cost. There are three key points I wanted to make here. First, on demand, as Elon mentioned, customer interest in our products remains high. Second, on cost reduction, we're holding steady on our plans to rapidly increase volume while improving overhead efficiency, which is the most effective method to retain strength in our operating margins. In particular, we're accelerating improvements in our new factories in Austin, Berlin, and in-house cells, where inefficiencies are the highest. But we are attacking every other area of cost and unwinding cost increases created from multiple years of COVID-related instability. This includes logistics, expedites, accumulation of material buffers, part premiums, productivity, and overheads, as an example. As the world transitions from an inflationary to deflationary environment, we expect a strong partnership with our suppliers on this journey as well. In net, we've priced our products with a view towards a longer-term cost structure. Thus, there will be an impact on operating margin in the near term. However, we believe our margins will remain healthy and industry-leading over the course of the year. Third, we are continuing to ensure funding is prioritized for our long-term roadmap. This includes expanding in-house cell production, bringing Cybertruck to market, development of our next-generation vehicle platform, expansion of our manufacturing footprint, and growth of the energy business. We're looking forward to discussing these plans in more detail on our Investor Day in a month. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Zach. Let's now go to investor questions. The first question is, some analysts are claiming that Tesla orders net of cancellations came in at a rate less than half of production in the fourth quarter. This has raised demand concerns. Can you elaborate on order trends so far this year and how they compare to current production rates? I think we've
already answered that question.
Yes, exactly.
The demand far exceeds production. We actually are making some small price increases as a result.
Thank you. The second question is in similar vein. What is the initial reaction been to global price reductions in early 1Q 2023, specifically in terms of order intake levels? We've answered that one as well.
Yeah.
So let's go to the next one. The next investor question is, will Tesla be able to take full advantage of advanced manufacturing production credits for battery cells packs? So $3,700 per long-range Model 3 and Model Y, it's $45 a kilowatt hour. For autos and energy products, and how much does Tesla expect to earn in the coming year from these credits?
I'll say a little bit about it, then I think Zach will add some. Long-term, we expect the value of these credits to be very significant. You can do the math. If we were to get anywhere near 1,000 gigawatt hours a year of production, or even a few hundred gigawatt hours, it's very significant. So, but the credits do rely upon domestic manufacturing, and in the case of Panasonic, with domestic manufacturing, we're splitting the value of the credits. The value of the credits this year will not be gigantic, but I think it could be gigantic in the future. We think it probably will be very significant in the future.
Yeah, just to add and put some boundaries on what we're expecting in terms of impact to Tesla for this year. So different products we think will get different amounts of credit. The regulations here are still in flux and there continues to be updates. So this is just our best understanding at the moment. But, we think on the order of 150 million to 250 million per quarter this year and growing over the course of the year as our volumes grow. And, part of the work we're doing here, which is part of what this incentive package is trying to incentivize, is, as Elon mentioned, to move more manufacturing onshore in the United States, which is Tesla's plans anyways. And so I think we're pretty well positioned over the coming years to take advantage of this. But then also, part of what the goal of this incentive package is to improve adoption from our customers. And so we also want to use these incentives to improve affordability as we think about what the price points are on our products going forward. And so as we were thinking about our pricing changes in the U.S. a couple of weeks ago that we announced, we were looking at what the credit benefit to Tesla would be to make sure that customers are able to receive the benefit not only from this that we're receiving to some extent, but also on the consumer-facing side, which is currently $7,500 per car of tax credit, assuming that, subject to the MSRP caps and the income caps. So, we want to use this to accelerate sustainable energy, which is our mission and also the goal of this bill.
Thank you very much. The next question from investors is, after recent price cuts, analysts release expectations that Tesla automotive gross margin, excluding leasing and credits, will drop below 20% and average selling price around $47,000 across all models. Where do you see average selling price and gross margins after the price cuts?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll jump in on this. There's certainly a lot of uncertainty about how the year will unfold, but I'll share what's in our current forecast for the moment. So, based upon these metrics here, we believe that we'll be above, both of the metrics that are stated in the question. So 20% automotive gross margin, excluding leases and red credits, and then 47K ASP across all models. And so, two other comments I want to make on this, just tactically on sequential ASP changes from Q4 to Q1. Just as a reminder, the ASP reduction is not as large as the reduction in configurator prices. As in Q4, we had backlog customers that were delivering cars to at a lower price book, given that backlogs had been so long for so much of 2022. But then also there are various programs in place that we used in Q4 that lowered ASPs. The second comment I wanted to make here is that, as a management team here, we're most focused on what our operating margin is. And so, as other areas of the business become more important, particularly the energy business, which is growing faster than the vehicle business, and as we're heavily focused on operating leverage here, improving efficiency of our overheads, we think the right metric for us to be focused on is operating margin. And so I wanted to make sure that I shared that with the investor community as well, because that is what we're primarily managing to now.
Yes. Something that I think some of the smart retail investors understand, but I think a lot of others maybe don't, is that the every time we sell a car, it has the ability uploading software to have full self-driving enabled, and the full self-driving is obviously getting better very rapidly. That's actually a tremendous upside potential, because all of those cars, with a few exceptions, I mean, only a small percentage of cars don't have Hardware 3. So that means that there's millions of cars where full self-driving can be sold at essentially 100% gross margin. And the value of it, of FSD, grows as the autonomous capability grows. And then when it becomes fully autonomous, that is a value increase in the fleet that might be the biggest asset value increase of anything in history. Yeah.
Thank you. Let's go to the next investor question. Since Elon started political influencing, polls from Morning Consult and YouGov show Tesla brand
favorability. You can trust them with your life.
Show Tesla brand favorability declining in 2022 and division among partisan lines. Such brand damage can impact demand. Does Tesla track favorability, and how will any brand damage be mitigated?
Well, let me check my Twitter account. Okay, so I've got 127 million followers. It continues to grow very rapidly. That suggests that I'm, reasonably popular. I might not be popular with some people, but for the vast majority of people, the follow account speaks for itself. I'm the most interactive account, social media account, I think, maybe in the world, certainly on Twitter. And that actually predated the Twitter acquisition. So I think Twitter is actually an incredibly powerful tool for driving demand for Tesla. And I would really encourage companies out there of all kinds, automotive or otherwise, to make more use of Twitter and to use their Twitter accounts in ways that are interesting and informative entertaining, and it will help them drive sales, just as it has with Tesla. So the net value of Twitter, apart from, you know, a few people are, you know, complaining, is gigantic, obviously.
Thank you. Let's go to the next question. Please provide a detailed explanation of where you are on the 4680 ramp. What are the current roadblocks, and when do you expect to scale to 10,000 vehicles a year, a week?
Yeah, thanks, Martin. First, I just want to say congrats and thanks to the Tesla 4680 team for achieving 1K a week in Q4. It was no small feat, definitely a result of, you know, more than a couple of years of hard work. As far as where we stand in Texas, one of four lines are in production, with the remaining three in stages of commissioning and install. Really, our 2023 goal as a 4680 team is to deliver a cost-effective ramp of 4680s well ahead of Cybertruck. Focus areas are dialing in and improving the quality of the high-volume supplied mechanical parts and driving factory process yields up as much as possible. Between the two of those things, if we achieve those key goals, we'll be well set up to for a major 4680 year in 2024.
Thank you. Next investor question is, Elon said previously that FSD Hardware 4 will most likely come first in Cybertruck. Is that still the current plan? Do you expect there to be an upgrade path for Hardware 3 cars to Hardware 4?
Yeah, Cybertruck will have Hardware 4. And for 2023, Cybertruck will not be, you know, a significant contributor to the bottom line, but it will be in next year. So it's an incredible product. I can't wait to drive it personally. It will be the car that I drive every day. Actually, just I'm wearing the T-shirt with the smashed glass. It's just one of those products that only comes along once in a while, and it's really special. So, So, with respect to upgrading cars that have Hardware 3, I don't think that will be needed. Hardware 3 will not be as good as Hardware 4, but I'm confident that Hardware 3 will so far exceed the safety of the average human. So, what we're aiming for is like, well, how do we get ultimately to, you know, let's say for argument's sake, if Hardware 3 can be, say, 200 or 300% safer than human, Hardware 4 might be, you know, 500 or 600%. There will be a Hardware 5 beyond that. What really matters is are we improving the average safety on the road? It is the cost and difficulty of retrofitting Hardware 3 with Hardware 4 is quite significant. So it would not be, I think, economically feasible to do so.
Thank you. The next question is for Zach. Zach, when do you think Tesla Insurance will become big enough revenue source to warrant providing more details in the financials of the business so investors can compare it to other insurance companies?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to take some time before this business is large enough for specific financial disclosures. But I'm happy to provide an update on where we stand in the business. So we're currently at a $300 million annual premium run rate as of the end of last year. We're growing 20% a quarter, so it's growing faster than the growth in our vehicle business. And in the states in which we're operating, on average, 17% of the customers in those states are using a Tesla insurance product. So and that number continues to tick up as we spend more time in markets. And we see most of the adoption occurring when folks take delivery of a new car as they're setting up insurance for the first time, as opposed to going back and switching when they already have insurance set up. So there's an inherent stickiness in the insurance business.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, just as a broader reminder on kind of the motivation for starting this business, it was to improve, and still is, to improve the total cost of ownership of our cars. given that we're seeing high premiums of insurance from third-party companies. And that remains our priority here. You know, we'll obviously run this as a healthy business, but we want to make sure we keep our costs low and insurance stays affordable to our customers.
Yeah, and so there are two really important side benefits for Tesla Insurance that are worth mentioning, one of which Zach alluded to, which is that just by Tesla offering insurance for our cars at a competitive rate, that makes the other car insurance companies offer better rates for Teslas. So it has a bigger effect than you'd think because it improves total cost of ownership or insurance costs even when they don't use Tesla insurance, because now the guy goes off the world have to compete with Tesla and cannot charge outrageous insurance for Teslas. So it's great. So it has an amplified effect, very important. Then it is also giving us a good feedback loop into minimizing the cost of repair of Teslas for all Teslas worldwide. Because we obviously want to minimize the cost of repairing a Tesla if it's in a collision, and for Tesla insurance. And previously, we didn't actually have good insight into that because the other insurance companies would cover the cost. And actually, the costs in some cases were unreasonably high. So we've actually adjusted the design of the car and made changes in the software of the car to minimize the cost of repair. Obviously, minimize the first. The best repair is no repair. Avoid the accident entirely. Which, since every Tesla comes with the most advanced active safety in the world, whether or not you buy full self driving, you still get the intelligence of full self driving or active safety, active collision prevention. So it's giving us this really good feedback loop for, again, reducing total cost of ownership and also just figuring out how to get, if somebody's car is in an accident. Most accidents are actually small. They're like, a broken fender or scratched side of the car or something like that. They're not that's the vast majority of accidents. We're actually solving how to get somebody's car repaired very quickly and efficiently and back in their hands. And like I said, those improvements actually apply then to all cars. And we're making, just to emphasize another key point, because some of these points might be lost, so I apologize for being repetitive, but it's remarkable how small changes in design of the bumper and improving of the, obviously improving the logistics of spare part, or providing spare parts needed for collision repair, have an enormous effect on the repair cost. So if you're waiting for a part to get repaired and that part takes a month, now you've got a month of having to rent another car. It's very extremely expensive. And of course, you're missing the car that you love and actually want to drive. So this is actually a very significant effect on total cost of ownership and customer happiness.
Thank you. The next question from investors is Cybertruck production still on track for mid-year?
We do expect production to start, sometime this summer. But I always like to try to downplay the start of production because the start of production is always very slow. But it increases exponentially, but it's always very slow at first. So I wouldn't put too much stock in starter production. It's kind of when does volume production actually happen, and that's next year.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's right, Elon. Like, just to emphasize on that, we've started installation of all the production equipment here in Giga Texas, castings, GA, general assembly, body shops. We built all our beta vehicles, some more coming still in the next month, but as you said, the ramp will really come 2024.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. And the last investor question is, with near infinite global demand for energy storage,
Yeah, seriously. Where
should Tesla build the next megapack factories? How many are needed on each continent?
It's a good question. It's not something we'll provide an update about that in the future, but it's something we're thinking about very carefully. really kind of like, what is the fastest path to 1,000 gigawatt hours a year of production? You'll see announcements come out later this year and next that answer that question.
Thank you. Okay, and now let's go to analyst questions. The first analyst question comes from Rod Latch from Wolfe Research. Rod, feel free to unmute your mic.
I think I'm unmuted. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, thank you. Firstly, it sounds like your 1.8 million unit volume indication for this year is somewhat more supply constrained and demand constrained. Then I have a follow up on cost. But is that an accurate statement?
I mean, our internal production potential is actually closer to 2 million vehicles, but we, we're saying 1.8 because, I don't know, there just always seems to be some friggin' force majeure thing that happens somewhere on Earth. And, we don't control if there's like earthquakes, tsunamis, wars, you know, pandemics, et cetera. So, if it's a smooth year, actually, you know, without some big supply chain interruption or massive problem, we actually have the potential to do 2 million cars this year. We're not committing to that, but I'm just saying that's the potential. So, and I think there would be demand for that too.
Yeah. Thanks for clarifying that. And on the cost side, the numbers that we just saw from you, as you pointed out, were weighed down by the 4860 ramp, the Berlin, Austin, gigacastings processes not at rate. Can you give us a bit of an indication of the headwind that you're absorbing from those things, like you did last quarter? And then lastly, on cost. Do you think that we can tease out an interesting data point from on where battery costs are headed from this announcement that you just made last night? If I'm correct, it looks like the investment cost per kilowatt hour is less than half of what I've seen anywhere else, maybe $30 a kilowatt hour for that capacity.
I don't think we want to say the specific number, but it's interesting if you look at the size of Giga Nevada that is allocated to make 100 gigawatt hours is a small fraction of the size that currently makes about 35.
Yeah, I mean, the goals we outlaid at Battery Day on reducing the investment required to deploy cell manufacturing, I mean, that's been a key focus of ours, and the team is doing a good job hitting the marks on that focus.
Yeah, and it goes back to the point I was making, and I said that several years ago. I think Tesla's really that the competitive strength that will be by far the hardest for other companies to replicate is Tesla being just damn good at manufacturing and having the most advanced manufacturing technology in the world. And if you've got that sort of advanced manufacturing toolbox, you can apply it to many things, and we're applying it now to battery cells. I should also say that we have other products in development. We're not going to announce them, obviously, but they're very exciting. And I think we'll blow people's minds when we reveal them. Tesla has the most exciting product roadmap of any company on Earth by a long shot. And we'll continue to, I think, be in that position. We got more great ideas than we know what to do with here. The future is very exciting. As I said in the last call, there's going to be bumps along the way, I think we'll probably have a pretty difficult recession this year. Probably, I hope not, but probably. One can't predict the short-term sort of stock value because. When there's a recession and people panic in the stock market, then prices of stocks, both value of stocks, can drop sometimes to surprisingly low levels. But long term, I am convinced that Tesla will be the most valuable company on Earth.
Thank you. And I think, Zach, there was a question on cost headwind in Q4.
Yeah. I mean, our weighted average COGS for the company, you know, if you were to assume Austin and Berlin were at the cost structure of our other factories, it was on the order of 2,000 to 2,500 of headwinds. So I think from there you can back into margin impact of those factories as of end of Q4.
Thank you very much. And let's go to the next question from Pierre Ferragu from New Street Research. Pierre, please go ahead.
Thanks, Martin. Can you hear me well?
Yes. Yeah.
Excellent. Zach, I'd like to follow up on the data point you just gave on cost. If I look back at the COGS per car, you guys bottomed close to $36,000 in the middle of 2021. And then the number went up as you had to face with inflation in input cost and the ramp of Berlin and Texas. And this quarter, I think we are close to $40,000. And we peaked maybe close to $42,000 at some point last year. And so my question from here is, how much time do you think it takes you to get back to this kind of 36K, which would mean, you know, Berlin and Texas and like the input cost, all that stuff is normalizing. Is that like, and that would be like a kind of like a 10% decline in the COGS per car. Is that something we can hope to see this year, or is that too optimistic?
You know, the Austin and Berlin ramp inefficiencies in 4680 will make a substantial amount of progress on that over the course of the year, and that's within Tesla's control. We're doing a lot of work on cost reduction outside of that. And we talked about supply chain costs, expedites, logistics, attacking everything. You know, on the raw materials and inflation side, where lithium is the large driver there, and this was a meaningful source of cost increase for us, you know, we'll have to see where lithium prices go. And, you know, we're not fully exposed to lithium prices, but I think in general, is what we've seen from our forecast here, cost per car of lithium in 2023 will be higher than 2022. So, you know, that's a headwind that would have to be overcome to return back to those levels. So I don't think we'll get there this year, but I think we'll make progress. And we'll continue to find ways to offset these raw material costs that we don't have control over. And is there anything on that?
Yeah, like on the non-sales raw material, we begin to capture, you know, benefits of indexes tapering off. But due to the length of various supply chains, it does take time before this is reflected in our financials. And while aluminum is down like 20% year over year, steel is about 30% down year over year. The global non-sales raw materials market continues to be influenced by geopolitical situations in Europe, high production costs due to labor cost increases and energy spikes, and disruptions due to natural disasters like typhoon in Korea 4 months ago, pandemic lockdowns. So we believe that meaningful price corrections will ultimately come, but it remains uncertain exactly when. In the meantime, we continue to redesign supply chain to make it more efficient and work with our supplier partners to find more efficiencies, streamline logistics and transportation to reduce costs.
Excellent, thank you. And I have a quick...
Sorry, you wanted to say something?
I was just gonna say, we're also, you know, our fleet is starting to mature, the 3Y fleet, and we're gathering a lot of data out of that fleet to understand how we can sort of bring some margin that we didn't know we had out of the product. So over the course of 2023 on the powertrain side, we're actually going to go after sort of some materials where we're paying for more performance than we need, or we have more content than we need without impacting reliability at all. And you know, that will actually add up to a pretty significant cost reduction on the powertrain side over the course of 2023. So we're not just sort of relying on supply. We're also doing design actions to bring cost out.
Yeah, and my guess is if the recession is a serious one, and I think it probably will be, but I hope it isn't. That would lead to meaningful decreases in almost all of our input costs. So I would expect to see deflation in our input costs most likely. which would then lead to better margins. I'm just guessing here, so this is, but that would be my guess.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So as a quick follow-up, Elon, I was thinking about like FSD, and when you look at like the situation today compared to a year ago, it's like the progress has been like amazing in the quality of the product, but also its rollout. And so I was wondering, how much is this like impacting the take rate of FSD today? So do you already see that people are getting more excited by FSD because they see it around them on 400,000 cars and they see the value of the service already? Or is that too early to really see like to expect like an uptick in the tech rate?
The trend is very strong towards use of FSD, and as you allude to, with each incremental improvement, the enthusiasm obviously increases. I think something that still a lot of people out there don't quite appreciate is that Tesla, which I've always said like Tesla is much a software company as a hardware company, but Tesla is really one of the world's leading AI companies. This is kind of a big deal, not both AI on the software side and on the hardware side. You know, with the Hardware 3 inference computer, still the most efficient inference computer in the world, despite being at this point 5 years old from the design point, and with Hardware 4 coming, and then Hardware 5 beyond that, where there are significant leaps, the Dojo computer, we expect to be using that operationally at Tesla later this year. And we're seeing just a lot of world-class AI talent join the company. There's also the long-term potential of Optimus, where we're able to use our expertise in electric motors and power electronics, batteries, and advanced manufacturing to be able to make a humanoid robot that is actually useful and can be made at high volume with exceptional capabilities because of the autopilot AI that, where we take the car is like a robot on four wheels and the Optimus is a robot on legs. But as we get closer and closer to solving real world AI, and we don't see anyone even close to us in achieving this, the value, I think you appreciate this and a few others do, but most don't know what I'm talking about. So but this is the thing that has order of magnitude potential market cap improvement for Tesla.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Alex Potter from Piper Sandler.
Can you hear me, guys?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, great. So quick one on FSD. This, I guess, for Zach. Obviously, you unlocked some deferred revenue in the quarter that'll translate presumably into higher margins on every incremental sale going forward, so long as people opt in for FSD. But was wondering if you're able to disclose the percentage of the $15,000 price that you're now going to be able to recognize as revenue up front rather than deferred.
Yeah, I mean, the way that we've structured this is a full self-driving package is two components. There's enhanced autopilot, the price of which is listed on the website. We fully recognize that. Then there's an incremental, which is for the additional features that full self-driving offers. And we've released a portion of that. And then there's a minority of the total package that's remaining that will be released over time as software updates are there. And in our shareholder letter, in addition to disclosing the dollar amount of the deferred revenue release, we also included in there the dollar value of the balance of unreleased deferred revenue that will be released over time with future software updates.
Okay, great. And then Maybe one additional question here on the incremental capacity in Nevada, the 4680s that you're planning. It's a lot of batteries, obviously, and presumably you won't be putting all of those in Tesla Semi. So I guess two questions about that incremental capacity. First, is it correct to assume that all of those 4680s are going to be more or less fungible and usable in your entire range of products? And if the answer is yes, then if you had to guess, how do you think that 100 gigawatt hours would be allocated between your various end markets?
I don't know. This is a bit too much guessing at this point.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you're right. Not all of the 100 gigawatt hours are going to go into the semi trucks. That is correct. I mean,
let's say, like, we I alluded to, a number of future products. Those future products would use the 4680.
Thank you. And the next question comes from George from Canaccord Research.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. So you recently adjusted prices, and that may have put many of your competitors in the back foot. In addition to that, capital markets have recently gotten a lot tougher. So with those factors in mind, I'm curious how you see the current competitive landscape changing over the next few years and who you see as your chief competitors 5 years from now.
Well, 5 years. 5 years is a long time. I was with the Tesla Autopart AI team late last night, and just we're just asking. I was just like, so who do we think is close to Tesla for a general solution for self-driving? And we still don't even know really who would even be the distant second. So. Yeah, it really seems like we're. I don't think you could see second place with a telescope. So, or at least we can't. That won't last forever. So, in 5 years, I don't know. Probably somebody's figured it out. I don't think it's any of the car companies that we're aware of. But I'm just guessing that someone might figure it out eventually.
I mean, beyond that, Elon, like in the vehicle space, even though the market's shrinking, we're growing, and EVs have doubled almost year over year. So like it whoever keeps up with the trend of EVs is going to be your competitor. And the Chinese are scary. We always say that. A lot of people always look at the EV market share, but we always look at it as how much of the total vehicle space do we have, and we're just going to keep growing in that space. There's 95% for us to go get.
Yeah, and I do want to say, I think we have a lot of respect for the car companies in China. They are the most competitive in the world. That is our experience, and the Chinese market is the most competitive. They work the hardest and they work the smartest. That's so a lot of respect for the China car companies that we're competing against. If I were to guess, it would probably be some company out of China is the most likely, to be second, to Tesla. The Tesla China team is winning in China. And I think we actually are able to attract the best talent in China. Hopefully that continues. So yeah, super fired up about the future, and it's going to be great.
Just as a follow-up, the Inflation Reduction Act has created huge tax incentives for commercial vehicles. You mentioned an incredibly interesting product pipeline. Are there maybe some plans to accelerate commercial vehicle form factors outside of the Tesla Semi to help accelerate EV adoption?
Well, I was basically saying that, yes, but I'm not going to give you details because this is nice try. Yeah, of course. We have to always look at, like, what is the limiting factor for new vehicles? Because if for the longest time we've been constrained on total cell, lithium ion production output. And so people say, like, why not bring this other car to market or that other car to market? Well, it doesn't really help if all you're doing is shuffling around the batteries from one car to another. In fact, it hurts because you add complexity, but you don't add incremental volume. So it's sort of pointless. In fact, counterproductive to add model complexity without solving the availability of lithium-ion batteries. So as we saw, as we get new product introduction to match where the cells are available for that new product to use those cells without cannibalizing the cells of the other cars. That's the actual limiting factor for new models, not anything else really.
Thank you. Let's go to the next question. The next question comes from William Stein from Truist.
Great. Thanks for taking my question. Elon, you started to answer this earlier, but I like to ask this question about the AI elements of your business and ask if you could comment on progress around Dojo and Optimus and your anticipation for the likelihood, for example, for the company to disconnect the GPU cluster in favor of Dojo and to have some market achievement in Optimus.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, since we're still at the early stages, there are big error bars in any predictions. It's like easy to predict the long term, but hard to predict the time in between now and then. Dojo will be competitive with the NVIDIA H1 at the end of this year, and then hopefully surpass it next year. The key there is like I think what's the energy usage required for a given amount of for if you're training a frame of video, what's the energy cost required to do that training? We said this already actually at AI Day 2, so it's not new information, but we do see potential for an order of magnitude improvement relative to GPU, what GPUs can do for Dojo, which is obviously very specialized for AI training. It's hyper specialized for AI training. So wouldn't be great for other things, but it should be extremely good for AI training. So just like if you do an ASIC for something, it's going to be better than a CPU. This is sort of in some ways like a giant ASIC, and we're able to since we're operating one of the biggest GPU clusters in the world already. We've got a good sense of how efficient the GPU clusters operate, and what Dojo needs to do in order to be competitive. But we think that it does have a fundamental architectural advantage because it's designed not to be the GPU is trying to do many things for many people. They're trying to do graphics, video games. Doing crypto mining, it's doing a lot of things. We're just doing one thing, and that is training. And we're also optimizing the low-level software to at a very sort of bare metal level. So it's just insanely good at efficient training. And the intercommunication between the Dojo modules is extremely high. You're not going across an Ethernet cable. We see a path to an order of magnitude improvement in the energy efficiency per given unit of training, but we also have to achieve that. And so, when will it be achieved? It's hard to say, but we do see a path to get there. And then also an inference, like once you've got something trained, well, if you want to have a product, that's a consequence of that training, and that product may not be anything to do with cars, then the efficiency of inference is extremely important. And so we also have by far the most efficient inference computer in with the FSD computer in the car. You know, this has potential for products that links it aren't even really in automotive.
Thank you. And William, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, it sounds like the 1.8 million units you expect this year is supply, not demand limited supply, it sounds like, by the lithium batteries. If you were to become demand limited, can you talk to us about your propensity to use price and your relatively high industry margins to grow units and share?
Yeah, to be clear, the 1.8 million is not cell supply limited. We did address that number earlier in the call. I don't know if you want to answer.
Yeah, it's roughly, you know, a cell supply is roughly matched with that. And it's, you know, 1.8 million cars, you know, if we get lucky, it could be more. And then the rest would go into stationary storage, the Powerwall and Megapack.
Okay, let's have the final question from Adam Jonas.
Hi, Elon, first question is it time for Tesla to significantly expand the captive FinCo? I mean, you only have like $4.5 billion of these receivables. It's basically nothing compared to other big auto companies. Then I have a follow-up.
Oh, Zach, maybe it's best to answer that.
Yeah, I mean, the way that we've been using captive financing so far is to plug what we believe to be gaps in the market of existing third-party products. And so we have a couple of offerings in Europe. We do loans for energy business, retail energy business here in the U.S. We do leasing, and we do a small amount of U.S. loans that are very targeted. And so we're using captives to support market gaps, as I mentioned. So basically as a vehicle to support vehicle sales, make sure customers have access. I do think there's opportunity here to continue to grow this. We are growing it slowly here. It is a consumer of cash, so we're being cautious on how we do that. But, you know, the plumbing is in place to do a lot more here. And I think we'll have to see how things unfold over the course of the year and make decisions real time as to how much we ramp it up versus ramp it back.
I think if we see a severe recession this year, which, like I said, hopefully we don't. In severe recessions, cash is king big time because it's in such short supply. So we want to be cautious about using cash for loans and that sort of thing for cars. You know, I feel we're in a very strong position to get through a recession because we really don't have any debt, and we've got over $20 billion of cash, which is great. The cash is earning a ridiculous return, not a good return. So it's like non-trivial. The interest rate is actually means the $20 billion is earning like quite a good amount. I've made this point on Twitter a few times, and I'm sure a lot of people on this call understand the basic value of a security is a function of the risk-free rate, or we'll see how risk-free it really is, but of the T-bill rate. So if you've got, you know, I think if I recall correctly, the S&P 500 has a long-term rate of return of roughly 6%. And so I think the Fed needs to be very cautious about having a Fed rate that potentially exceeds 6%. If we see deflation, and I think we are seeing deflation, then you would add the deflation number to the in quotes risk-free rate from the Fed, and as that starts to exceed 6%, now you're starting to exceed the long-term return of the S&P 500, and it starts to become questionable as to why not just put your money in T-bills or a savings account, essentially, instead of in the S&P 500. If the S&P 500 is variable and the bank interest rate is not, this is mm-hmm. so basically the Fed is at risk of crushing the value of all equities. This is quite a serious danger.
Thanks, Elon. And just a follow up. I don't want to steal thunder from March 1st down in Austin, but how close are we to that step change improvement in BOM cost where you could sell an EV for under $25,000 or $30,000 and actually generate a profit, that a kind of real moving assembly line moment in manufacturing? Again, don't want to steal the thunder, but just if you wanted to kind of wrap up with thoughts there, that'd be helpful.
Oh, man.
Thanks, Elon.
I mean, I'd love to answer, you know, if I were you, I'd probably be asking the same question, but we would be jumping the gun on future announcements.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, everyone, for all your good questions, and we will see you again in 3 months' time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
As we usually do, I'll go through some of the recap here. We'll set some highlights. Give me a second to get set up, and I'll up the volume here. I think it's probably a little bit low. So we'll up that. Hopefully that's okay. We'll do that slowly. Don't want to scare anybody. Just a little bit more. Hopefully that's higher. Don't worry, I see that it's low. All right, hopefully that's a little bit better. And looking better. All right, well, interesting call. I don't think there was anything probably like too earth-shattering on that, all things considered. Obviously, we got a lot of news. I think I'm going to have to go back here to see some of the highlights. I think just kind of off the top of my head, interesting comments on hardware 3, 4, and 5, particularly Elon saying that hardware 4 would not be economically feasible to retrofit. So, depending on your point of view on where FSD is at today and how far it has to go, I think that that could be good or bad. If you think hardware 3 can do it, great. If not, that's obviously going to be some disappointing news, but I think it speaks to... I think it's interesting in regards to hardware 4 because it means that there are probably more significant changes to Tesla's hardware setup than swapping out the FSD computer, swapping out some cameras. There must be some sort of structural changes that would make Elon say that, because if it's just swapping out those pieces, you can do that pretty easily. If it's just putting a higher resolution camera, faster computer, more efficient computer in, all that stuff is easy to do, and Tesla kind of prepared to be able to do that someday if needed. And we've already kind of seen that from hardware 2.5 vehicles. But for him to say that, you know, it suggests that there are more significant changes. So interesting on that point. I don't think that's the biggest takeaway from this call, but just kind of something that stuck with me as we went through. All right, so let's just kind of scroll back through these notes. I think we've got some opening comments there. Still targeting 1,000 gigawatt hours of in-house battery production. They talked about the split of battery credits with Panasonic. So I know there had been some discussion about contracts with Panasonic saying that any battery credits would go to Tesla. But obviously Panasonic is their supplier. Tesla wants to keep a good relationship with them, keep them in a good spot in terms of running their business as well. So those things can obviously be renegotiated, as I pointed out before. So it sounds like that's part of what has happened here, and Tesla would be splitting those with Tesla, with Panasonic. Zach said $150 million to $250 million per quarter, ramping up as they increase deliveries. So demand, interest remains high. Elon talked about how this has been the most significant order rate that they've ever had in the first part of the year. I would have to look back at price adjustments in previous time periods, but I don't think usually you have such a steep price drop at the beginning of the year. And obviously, as we've talked about many times, that's going to result in a big increase in orders for the short period following that. So Elon said whether that's sustainable, we don't really know. But he said right now, a couple times, the new orders are a couple times what their current production rate is. And if we look at the guidance for this year, 1.8 million vehicles, and even if we up that to 2 million vehicles, 1.8 is roughly the production rate that Tesla was at, a little bit higher than the delivery rate that Tesla was at for Q4. But I think we did, 439,000 produce in the fourth quarter, which is 1.75 million in a year. So Tesla is sort of saying just flat production from where we're at right now. They mentioned something in the letter talking about how Giga Shanghai would probably not continue to see the type of growth that it has been seeing in 2021, in 2022 for this year. It's kind of my interpretation of their comment there, which also goes along with that sort of guidance. So kind of what it sounds like is, hey, the growth is going to come for these vehicles, Model Y particularly, from Giga Texas, from Giga Berlin this year. Those two factories, that's probably what gets Tesla up to sort of that 2 million vehicle type of a number. Obviously, towards the end of the year, that number would be a higher number in terms of a run rate. But I think Tesla, from their comments on the last call, from their comments on this call, talking a lot about Investor Day on March 1st, talking about all these things that are exciting that they can't talk about yet, I think they're starting to make the shift in terms of where they're putting their money, putting their time, putting their investment. I think they're starting to shift that to the next generation. Not that their focus has not been on that for a long time, but it kind of seems like we're coming to a little bit of a plateau in terms of where the business is with this current generation. I think that's a big part of why we've seen a little bit of this repricing, obviously other factors alongside that, but earnings at this level, there's probably some operational efficiency that can be, pulled back out of that. There's efficiency from Berlin and Texas that can be pulled back out of that, that hopefully increase Tesla's earnings potential at this base. But really, Wall Street wants to see what that next base is, and Tesla right now, at least, not really giving us a lot of information on that. When we're at this point with S and X, you've got Model 3, in the queue, and then you've got Model Y following that shortly thereafter. So it's very easy when you have the information on those vehicles to put that in your model and forecast for that continued growth and see where the business would end up with sort of playing in that segment. You can still do that today, but Tesla's just not given us a solid vehicle to go ahead and put in the model. And until we have that, analysts just aren't really going to, trust that. So hopefully that's where we get a little bit more information in terms of Investor Day on March 1st, which we're coming up fast on, probably 5-6 weeks away at this point in time. All right, battery credits, so we talked about that. Auto gross margin, so specifically asked the question about auto gross margin X credits below 20%. Zach said there's, of course, a lot of uncertainty. They can't know all of their input costs right now for the entire year, but their current forecast at the moment, he does not believe that they will fall below those metrics, so 20% or 47,000 average selling prices. Similar question on cost of goods sold later on, I think that was by Pierre, in terms of if the average cost of goods sold would fall back to kind of the low that it had hit back in, maybe that was 2021, maybe early 2022, can't remember exactly, but so it kind of sounds like they're mostly guiding for somewhat of stability on both lines, and then recapturing some of the negative impacts of Berlin and Texas is sort of how I view it for this year. They did note that outside of battery cells, costs are probably coming down, but lithium, Zach did say that even though that has been a significant hindrance to margins this year, or hindrance to average cost of goods sold on vehicles, they do expect that that will continue in 2023. So, the Corpus Christi lithium refinery for Tesla, that really can't come soon enough. This is just high period of demand for a constrained resource. Hopefully, if there is a recessionary type of environment, that cools off some of that demand, and you've got people scrambling right now to secure contracts. If people lower growth plans, there might be a little bit less of that, scramble from everybody, which we've talked about a couple of times, and hopefully that can free up some supply at somewhat more reasonable prices. Now, Zach did talk about just how they're thinking about margins and stuff like that, talking about, okay, yes, we think that automotive gross margins will stay above 20%, but really what we're focused on is our operating margin. And this is what's really interesting about the energy side of business, is that even though it's only at 12% gross margins, if Tesla is basically growing that business at a lower margin rate than automotive, yes, that would hurt gross profit. But if they're doing that on the same fixed cost basis for the entire organization, then a lot of that still trickles down into net profitability, which, okay, if you're at 12% gross profits and you have no operational expenses, then obviously that comes down to a 12% operating margin too. And that's not too far off of where Tesla's total business is at right now, primarily driven, of course, by automotive. So I think that's what Zach is kind of pointing to there, is saying, hey, if we get some improvement here on the top line for, or rather on the margin line for Tesla Energy, as that business grows and becomes an even bigger part of the total, that's going to probably positively contribute to Tesla's operating margin as well. So you might see a little bit of a decline in automotive gross margin. Some of that can be offset by just the economies of scale that the business is generating, the operating leverage that they're generating off of the energy business, which is growing significantly. We talked about how this quarter, energy profits up 500% year over year. And if all that falls to the bottom line because there aren't a ton of operational expenses associated with that, that's where you start to see some of these wins. So that's why I bolded that point. I think that's a key piece as we think about how the business unfolds this year and going forward. Everyone's been excited about Tesla Energy for so long, and we seem to be right on the precipice of that starting to actually become something that is worth paying attention to, not just for retail investors, but for Wall Street too. So I was glad to see that comment. All right, let me take a breath there. I meant to have some water here, but I've forgot before this. so getting a little dry here. But Elon asked about political influencing. Unsurprisingly, Elon not really backing down too much on that. Not the type to do that, so not shocked at the response there. Everyone will have their own opinions on that. Battery production. So Drew did say that one out of four lines in Texas right now operation, but the other three are in commissioning or installation stages. And they believe that they'll have, their target is for a cost-effective ramp well ahead of Cybertruck this year. Of course, Elon said that that'll start in summer, but not hit production until volume production until next year. I think that's hopefully in line with most people's expectations at this point in time. But it sounds like, you know, at least some potential for significant expansion because of these lines. I think if you look at the 1,000 per week and you assume that that's a combination of their production in California and Texas, presumably that means that Texas is not the entire contributor to that. Hopefully once you sort of four times the production from Texas, that gives you, you know, more than 4,000 per week here from just these lines alone, which hopefully aren't too far off from being spun up. And Tesla must feel pretty good about it if they're investing so significantly in Giga Nevada. I wish people would have asked a little bit more about timing for the, you know, investment at Giga Nevada. That seemed like a little bit of a miss. They ask about the footprint and things like that. But unfortunately, we just don't know quite the timing on their targets there. Hardware 4, we talked about Tesla insurance. So interesting statistics that they gave us there. So $300 million in terms of the annual run rate at the end of the year. Doesn't mean they did that volume in 2022. But that means we should do more than $300 million from Tesla insurance in 2023. So I do have that in my model. It'll be interesting to see how that compares with what I've got in there. I don't remember it offhand, so I'll have to check. But 17% of Tesla customers in those markets using it, and that's higher for new customers because once you kind of pick your insurance, you're not locked into it, but you have to go actively try and make a new decision to change. So it's, as Zach said, a little bit sticky. But they reiterated not really trying to make it a profit center, just a healthy business, and then keeping the prices for premiums down for their customers, which can lower total cost of ownership. Obviously, I think it's also a play for FSD. Tesla can be their own insurance company there as well. All right, so Cybertruck still on track. Yes, sounded like that's all going well. Just again, temper expectations for this year. As disappointing as it is, we just have to do that, unfortunately. The 1,000 gigawatt hours reiterated. Elon could not bite his tongue on the guidance here. That was frustrating. I'm glad to know that that their internal target is 2 million, but it would have been nice if we had come to the end of the year and it was 2 million compared to 1.8, that is what Wall Street tends to like. Not that that matters all that much, but I feel like we were in a position where expectations were already low, that Elon could have left this out there as an easy bar to clear and just kind of didn't. So we'll see how that expectation shapes up throughout this year, but I guess good to know the targets are higher. Tesla, a little bit of, you know, a couple of years ago, sort of got into that playing the Wall Street game sort of mindset. Not that I'm advocating for them to do that or anything, but they started to be a little bit more conservative in their guidance and set targets that were achievable and have higher internal targets. And obviously that worked really well in terms of the perception of the stock, which sometimes, as we have talked about, perception can be reality. So sometimes it's just kind of something you got to play along a little bit with. But, you know, obviously Tesla's aggressive targeting has worked well historically too. So can't be too mad about that. Other products in development, again, second call in a row that we've heard Elon just really amping these things up. He did reiterate, he does view it as, he's convinced now, I think was the language he used, that Tesla will be the biggest company in the world. Back-to-back questions here from Pierre and Alex Potter, love to see that. Of course, we've had them both on the channel multiple times, probably overdue for another round with both of them. So some stuff on FSD, pricing, recession. No answer on the take rate, unfortunately. It would be nice to know what that take rate is. Hopefully that is improving. Elon said the use of FSD is increasing. So I think he's just kind of referring back to what they published in the shareholder deck, where it shows that graph of FSD miles. But obviously FSD miles are going to increase as you add more vehicles to the beta. So I think that's probably the primary driver of that right now. Tesla's got a ton of interesting FSD beta data that they just won't show us. Hopefully they start to publish more of that as it starts to look better. World-class AI driving a 10x market cap improvement in terms of the potential. FSD recognition. All right, so on the semi, not all of the 100 gigawatt hours will go to the semi. Potter was asking if the 4680 production is fungible. So can a 4680 cell that is produced for a semi also go into a next generation platform? Sounded like the answer to that was yes, or at least they have different purposes in mind, and it sounded like that one of those purposes would be a next generation platform, and perhaps something else in the commercial space. Elon asked specifically about that outside of Tesla Semi and said yes, of course, like why would we not be doing other commercial vehicles? So I don't know what that would entail. Maybe not a Class 8 truck, maybe playing in some of those other lighter duty vehicles. And of course, we've talked about the potential for a van. That's been something that's potentially been on Tesla's roadmap. And it seemed like Franz maybe alluding to that in that interview where he talked a little bit about the Cybertruck too. So maybe that's in play there, and maybe some vehicles in the spaces between those two. Dojo and Optimus stuff, I think we've talked a lot about that. Nothing too new there. Cell supply matched with guidance, so it doesn't sound too much like this year is super contingent on 4680 ramping. Previously, I think last year, Elon had said that it becomes more important this year, with Cybertruck volume production likely being more significant, obviously, for 2024. I think that's probably where 4680 starts to potentially become a limit in terms of the growth. Some recession stuff, why would you invest in stocks? How close are we to blow a $30,000 car? Okay, so I think that's most of it. If you did happen to watch if you watched or did not watch the earnings report reaction, that's on the channel, that is in the link below. I did make one error as we were kind of going through that. Tesla excluded the FSD revenue recognition from their automotive profit line. And because I was taking the automotive revenue line minus the automotive cost line to get my profit, which usually works, that number was different. So my numbers there were a little bit inflated because they included FSD revenue recognition. Tesla did not include that in those automotive profit lines, therefore the gross margin line. So if you're watching that, just kind of go back and adjust for that. We'll probably talk a little bit more about that throughout the rest of this week, but it makes the numbers look a little bit less strong than what I was thinking as we were filling that out. Automotive gross margin X credits, I think 24.3%. I was at 25.1%. So credits really boosted this quarter, and then the revenue recognition. Only $350 million, so Tesla's still got at least $700 million there, probably more than that, to recognize in terms of that deferred FSD revenue. Sounds like Zax is saying, hey, we recognized half of it for EAP, Enhanced Autopilot, and then some portion of the remainder for FSD beta, but not all of that quite yet. So we'll have to look at that. I'll get in my spreadsheet here, and we'll see what the average cost of goods sold are, things like that. But, we now kind of know where things are at and can model a lot better for next year. And then Zach also giving us that comment about not dipping below 20%. I think that's a positive. I think if I remember correctly, my forecast right now for Q1 is for an earnings decline sequentially. And I think my margin expectation is right around 20%. So we'll get back in that with all the new information that we've got, and hopefully update that pretty soon. All right. So thank you all for the super chats. I appreciate that. It's been fun tuning in. Obviously, the stock right now up almost 5%. So, you know, just kind of speaks to the expectations, or the lack of expectations, I guess, sort of the reset in expectations that the market has had on Tesla. Of course, with the stock having dropped 70-75%, now we're up maybe 45, almost 50% after hours here from the low. So it's nice to see that recovery. Like we talked about with the pricing change that day, you know, I think the comment I said was hopefully this marks a reset for Tesla. Hopefully we can move past being so focused on near-term earnings and more focused on what Zach talked about on the call today, generating that operating leverage and really scaling the business to take advantage of that in multiple different areas through vehicles, through energy storage. And Zach didn't say it specifically, but Elon kind of bringing that in. Also, you know, software, AI, things like that. So it's going to be a tricky year, tricky quarter here, especially Q1 as we continue, I think, seeing that reset. But once we do that, I think, you know, there's a lot of things to be excited about. And hopefully March 1st, Investor Day, sort of, culminates a lot of that excitement, and we get some visibility into, I think, the excitement that Tesla tangibly has on these calls. So we'll see. Very interesting time period right now. And I think that's where we'll leave it for today. So as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you are subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Thursday, January 26th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.